bowls of cereal strewn across the carpet, heavy with clotted milk. Half-eaten sandwiches attracting flies. I sat in the middle of the mess and I drank my wine. Who was I kidding? I knew what I was. I saw the mess, and I knew that I was at rock bottom. Despite the Pinot I'd bought from the Bishoptown newsagents with a pair of sunglasses over my smudged, shadowed eyes, I was an alcoholic. A depressed mess. After draining the last of the wine, I wandered into Aidan's room. It was untouched. Every now and then I'd come in and dust away the cobwebs. I'd sit on his bed, lift up walnut, and still smell the faintest scent of my son. But I hadn't cleaned his room for a long time, and there was a thick layer of dust along the windowsill. Worse still, a large fat spider sat on top of his pillow. The sight of it was so wrong, so jarring, that I lunged forward, punching the pillow. The spider scuttled away before my fist connected, probably running under the bed. But I kept going. I kept punching the stuffing out of Aidan's pillow, and then I threw back the duvet cover and threw the mattress to the side. A roar built up from my chest as I ran my arm along the windowsill, knocking away his trophy from sports day, third in the egg and spoon race, and a framed photograph of when he'd met his favourite footballer. I ripped down his poster of Iron Man. I threw his clothes out from the wardrobe. I tore the covers from his books. And then I stopped. I wiped my eyes. A sense of calm washed over me. And I knew what I needed to do. There was a second bottle of wine in the fridge, so I opened that and took a long swig. There was no need for glasses anymore. Who did I need to impress? Who would care? There wasn't anyone left. On my way through the house, I picked up a picture of us all together. Aidan was at the front, wearing his Superman cape. I was behind him with my hands on his shoulders. And on either side of me were my parents. Dad on my left, Mum on my right. I didn't cry. I just smiled and cradled the photograph to my chest. I'd already turned my bedroom into something of a studio. There were a dozen or more paintings stacked up along the walls. I picked one up. It was a self-portrait. I hated this portrait. It was angry and torn up. I'd used reds and blacks. My teeth were bared. I was ugly and ill in this painting, with booze-soaked eyes because I'd painted it while wasted, barely able to see the canvas with my blurred vision. I hated it. Setting down the wine bottle, I picked up the box-cutter knife I used to trim my canvases and stabbed the knife into the canvas. Slowly, I dragged the knife down. A great fire burned inside of me, and I knew it was time to extinguish it. What was the point of life if it was just pain? I felt like I was standing inside a burning building, and my only choices were to jump or let the fire consume me. I was sick to death of the fire. I collapsed onto the ground, dropping the torn-up canvas next to me, before taking out a second knife and placing it on my lap. Then I swigged from the bottle of wine. I was so numb from the alcohol, I figured it wouldn't hurt at all. I thought of the fire roaring within me. I thought of all the shit I'd been through. I thought of Aidan's coat pulled from the river and how the river continued on, rushing and gushing through the country while my son was rotting somewhere. I didn't even get to bury him. I didn't even get that much. I cried out before I plunged the knife into my wrist. I screamed before it even hurt. The pain wasn't from the gushing wound. It was from the fire. Burning, burning, my skin on fire. I screamed and I screamed until the flames finally died down. When I looked down, the blood poured out of the wound and I began to feel deliciously woozy. This was it. This was how I stopped the fire. If only I'd known sooner that it would be so simple. I started to fall back onto my bed, smiling. Finally, I had stopped the pain, and finally I had found the inner strength to jump from the burning building. But in my woozy state, I didn't hear the banging at the door, or the frantic voice calling my name. The door must have been open because Jake managed to get in within seconds. There were clattering footsteps and then my door was open. a face blurred before my eyes as he hooked his arms underneath my body, calling my name over and over again. There was a pressure on my wrist, and I was vaguely aware of the blood oozing between his fingers. I was vaguely aware of him saying, "No, no, no, this wasn't supposed to happen," and then I woke up in a hospital bed. It took me a long time to find gratitude for what Jake did for me that day. When I first woke up in the hospital room, I hated him more than I'd ever hated anyone. Hate was an emotion I'd never discovered before Aiden was taken from me in the flood. But if you get to live your life without ever experiencing hatred, then count yourself lucky. Count your blessings. Hate isn't something to crave or wish for. Never say you hate someone or something unless you really mean it, because hate is not finding a presenter on the telly annoying or losing your temper with a sibling. It's an all-consuming, living thing that starts in your bowels and infects your blood until it blackens your heart. And I hated myself. That's the worst kind of hate. I cried for a while. I went through shivers and shakes as the alcohol worked its way out of my body. I scratched at my bandages and refused to talk to Jake as he sat at my bedside reading from his art history books. He came day after day reading to me as I sat sullenly with my head turned away. He read about the Renaissance, about Caravaggio and his brutish tendencies and murderous temper. He read about Picasso and his painting of Guernica. He read to me every day, and soon enough I started to listen. Instead of picking up my food, I began to eat it. I requested water and orange juice, rather than sipping on whatever was available when my throat went dry. When it was quiet in the hospital, I turned on the television and watched a few daytime soaps. I even started replying to the nurses when they asked me how I was feeling. When they released me, I found Mum and Dad's cottage cleaned up and sparkling. Jake had sorted it all. He'd cleaned up my mess, removed all the alcohol from the house, hoovered, swept up the broken items and thrown them away. He'd even fixed up a few photograph frames I'd destroyed in my rage. On the coffee table was a stack of books about Picasso, Caravaggio, Monet and more. John Singer Sargent, Rembrandt, Da Vinci. There were brand new DVDs on the same subject piled up next to the DVD player. I thumbed through the books, flicking past the text to get to the beautiful portraits, some of which I'd never seen before. Then I found a new set of paints on the dining room table with a Get Well Soon card standing next to it. On the other side of the paints was an application form for a part-time administration job at the school. I sat down and completed it. I know some people might have been put off by the extraordinary lengths Jake went to aid my recovery. There are some women who might have found him creepy or overbearing, but it was everything I needed. Without even a hint of anything more than a platonic relationship, this man had taken his time to see me through the worst possible point of my life. I wasn't capable of love at that moment. I was too dried out by all the hate that had burned inside me. But I was close to loving him. There was a strong sense of affection blossoming in my blackened shell, which is why I allowed myself to become swept up into his life so suddenly. It's why I failed to see what he really was. Chapter 21. It was Friday, and there were still no leads about what had happened to Aiden. Marcus, the family liaison officer, informed me that fingerprints and DNA were being collected from various men in the area. Jake and Rob were to be included. I wasn't sure why they were bothering, since nothing had been found on Aiden the night he was found. Both Jake and Rob were questioned about the day Aiden went missing. Jake had been teaching at the secondary school on the day Aiden was taken. He'd been walking around the school checking the leaking roof. Various members of staff had seen him at the time. Rob had been making his way home from the building site, stuck in traffic outside Bishoptown. I didn't suspect either of them, but I understood that the men closest to Aiden were likely to be the first suspects. But watching them go into questioning made me think about the case differently. It had to be someone local, and that meant it might be someone I know. Aiden was taken from somewhere between Bishoptown School and the River Ouse between 1:15 p.m. and 2:10 p.m. I had crossed the bridge at around 2:10 p.m. That was how close I was to my own son being snatched from my life. Sometimes I still lie awake at night and wonder if I'd just reached out. I might have found him, grabbed him, and kept him close to me. But I could never go back and relive that day. I can never turn back the clock, run to the river, and stop the monster who stole my son. It's the helplessness that gets you in the middle of the night. The fact that no matter how safe you think your child is at any given time, there is always someone out there who wants to hurt them. In the days that followed, in between battling with bureaucracy to get Aiden an identity, I began forming a list of possible suspects. There were 5 male teachers at the local school, 2 of whom I'd always found a bit creepy, Simon, the IT teacher, a man in his 50s with a pot belly and dirty fingernails, and Chris, a young PE teacher who made crude, un-PC jokes in the staff room. Then there was Gail's weird son, Derek, who ran a local bakery with her. He'd never moved away from home, even at the age of 40, and never had a relationship with either a woman or a man. They were horrible thoughts, toxic and prejudiced, but I couldn't help it. Once I pulled that thread, it went even further. I spent the weekend cooped up in the house, still fuming with Jake over his apparent betrayal, passing all the names of those I suspected to Denise and Marcus, telling them in guilty whispers that perhaps this man was capable of such a crime, or that one. Denise was the one who spent most of her time with us, and she became my main confidant when I had a light bulb moment about yet another local man. Her response was always, "It could be anyone. We're doing the best we can." Once she said, "We don't even know for sure that the suspect is a male." Of course, I'd presumed that it was a man, but she had a point. Though there was evidence of sexual assault, the police hadn't found any traces of semen on Aiden's clothes or in his body, and without knowing where he had been confined, it was impossible to know if he really had been abused by a man. Though the thought made me feel physically sick, there was a chance that the kidnapper could be a woman. It might even explain how Aiden was able to escape. He would have had more chance of overpowering a woman than a man. In those days, I rarely left the house, but there were times when it was necessary. On Monday, I took Aiden to his second therapy session, and all the way there, I couldn't stop myself from making mental notes of yet more suspects as we drove through the village. Dr. Foster met us with a bright smile, but her gaze lingered on me for a little longer than usual. She could tell I was wired. She sat me down and let Aiden draw. When he was settled, I took more of his artwork out of my bag and showed it to her. She spread the paintings out over one of the tables, but seemed more distracted by me. "Has something happened, Emma?" she asked. "You seem a little on edge." I rubbed one hand over the other. "I read the newspapers. I've been reading them all. The stories are insane. They keep insinuating that it's my husband, Jake, who took Aiden." I swallowed, but my mouth was dry. "It can't be. I know him." "Take your time, Emma. No judgment here. Remember, if you need to talk, you can." I shook my head. "It's not just about whether I think it's true. It can't be true. He had an alibi. He was working in the school at the time. It's not possible, but they keep pointing the finger and dragging up some stupid business from his old school."
"What business is that?"
Dr. Foster asked.
"Some stupid photograph of him with his arm round a student. He chatted to her on the internet, if you believe the newspapers. They were Facebook friends, but that doesn't mean anything, does it?"
"Do you think it means something?"
Dr. Foster asked patiently.
"No, I'm letting myself get caught up in the game. The one played by the press, they're spinning tales that will sell newspapers, finding culprits who don't deserve to be accused. They're printing lies about my family."
I took a deep breath and stroked the bump. My back ached, my legs ached, and I was tired.
"I know this is hard, but you need to try and relax. Those stress levels are not good for the baby.
Have you been to see your GP recently?"
I shook my head.
"You should go, just for a checkup."
I nodded my head and rubbed my eyes, realizing she was right. With everything that was going on, I hadn't concentrated on looking after myself or the baby. I was letting down my unborn child. I hadn't even thought to concentrate on how often the baby was kicking. "Now, about Aiden's art," Dr. Foster stared down at the paintings. I'm seeing more expression here. He's forming more shapes and pictures than before. I think this is a door. I peered down at the picture she was pointing to. I'd had it the wrong way around before. Horizontal instead of vertical. I turned the picture around and examined it properly for the first time. She was right. There was no handle, but it did look like a door. Aidan had used light grey paint to almost completely fill the page, but there was some shading on the sides that indicated hinges. Wherever this door led to, it was almost certainly made from some sort of smooth metal, like a large fridge in a restaurant kitchen. The next morning, I managed to get to the doctor's before 10 a.m. to get an impromptu appointment. Aidan sat next to me on the chair, quietly looking at a woman's magazine. Next to us was a mother with three children, all of them climbing up over the seats like monkeys and throwing the toys from the play area onto the floor. It began with the mother glancing up at me every now and then, as if trying to figure out where she knew me from. Then there was a longer stare, and her eyes widened in recognition. I squirmed in my seat, adjusting my weight and trying to ignore the way she watched me from the other side of the room. "Horrible, what happened to you?" she said. Though I didn't owe her anything, I found myself offering a thin-lipped smile in response. "Is this in, then?" she indicated with her chin, moving her acne-scarred face in Aidan's direction. When Aidan didn't react, she waved her arm in the general direction of her kids and ushered them closer to her. "Sick, what happened to him?" The blood whooshed in my ears as I tried to remain calm. What right did this woman have to bring up the things that had happened to Aidan? Who did she think she was? I tried to ignore her, but I found myself rubbing my hands more frantically than before. I gritted my teeth, clenching my jaw harder and harder. "Kieran, come here!" she said, gathering her brood, clearly wanting them away from Aidan. Every now and then her eyes flicked over to Aidan and I saw fear in them. Perhaps she thought Aidan had been turned into a monster by what he had been through. Maybe she thought he was going to harm her children in some sort of by-proxy paedophilia. While she manoeuvred her children away from us, I found that I couldn't stop staring at her. She had a greasy ponytail pulled back so tightly it gave her skin a stretched, glossy appearance. She openly swore at her children when they misbehaved. "What makes you so special?" The room went very quiet. An elderly man placed his newspaper back down on his lap and turned towards me. I hadn't meant to say the words out loud, and certainly not with as much venom as I'd uttered them. But looking at that woman, I couldn't believe she'd been given the gift of normal, healthy children, when my child had been to hell and back. "Excuse me, love," she said in her rasping, ugly voice. "I said, what makes you so special? Why do you have everything? What the fuck's that supposed to mean, eh?" I turned my head away, scowling at the health pamphlets and a poster about heart disease. The doctor called my name and I stood, with Aidan following me. I walked straight past the woman and tried my best not to look at her again. "Only try to be nice, you miserable cow," she muttered, which I figured was typical of the British public. They want gratitude for caring. A little boy was kidnapped and tortured for a decade, and they feel sad about it. Good for them. So after feeling all this sadness, they see the boy in question out with his mother, and they just have to tell them the obvious. They feel sad. Wasn't it awful? Yes. Yes. It's very sad, and it's very awful. Thank you for feeling like that. But if you don't placate them, then fuck you and your son. Fuck right off, you deserve it. No one is as fickle as the public. And the reason they're that fickle is that the media tell them how to think and how to feel. Why else are talent shows packed full of sweeping emotional music edited just right to make you feel the pain and heartbreak when a hopeful doesn't get through? Why else are shots of tearful audience members shown during a sad rendition of a song or a tragic backstory retelling? It's all manufactured to make you buy things. Whether it's a car or a lifestyle or a newspaper, you're buying it because you're buying the story. And that is the truth of it all. When I lost my cool at that woman, I shattered the story she'd bought into. I made her reconsider what she thought was true. But I didn't resent people for buying into Aiden's story. I didn't begrudge them their sadness over his tragic life. What I hated was the idea that I had to be perfect, and if I wasn't perfect, then they weren't sad for me anymore. I hated and resented that. I was in pain. I was allowed to snap or make mistakes or do whatever the hell I wanted. I was a human being, not a story. And the world forgot that. As I passed that woman on my way to the GP's office, I thought all of that and more. A heavy tiredness seeped into my bones, and I wondered when, or if, this would all be over and I could get into a normal life.
Hi, Emma. How are you today? Hello, Aiden.
She didn't miss a beat, and I was glad for it. I'd had the same doctor since I was a baby. Dr. Fiona Watson, and over that time, she'd been a constant, albeit in a professional capacity. They hadn't been friends, Mum and Fiona, but they'd respected each other. And Mum would have been pleased that Fiona had taken over the running of the surgery after she died. As well as to be expected. I'm sorry for what you've been through, but it's a pleasure to see Aiden again. She smiled at Aiden, but he didn't react. Her eyes dropped, and I was glad she didn't bring any of it up again. After some poking and prodding, Dr. Watson sighed. Your blood pressure is high. Now, you had some high blood pressure after Aiden. After the flood. I think it's stress again. I'm going to prescribe you the same tablets you took back then. They're safe for pregnant women to use. The little one being giving you any jip. She's the kicker, I said. But apart from that, she seems fine. Have you been to see your midwife recently? Have you got anything set up for the birth? I had some blood taken a few months back, and we discussed it then. This last week has been a whirlwind. She nodded. You did the right thing coming to me. She scribbled on a pad of paper and tore the top sheet away. Try and get your feet up if you can. I know it's hard, given everything that's happening, but it's important. Is Jake looking after you? I smiled. Yeah, of course he is. He's been great. She nodded. I'm really sorry about what's happened. She paused, and I could see she was struggling with a desire to maintain professionalism and seeing a person before her whom she had known for over 30 years. If you need anything, I'm here. I thanked her and hurried out of the office, afraid I might begin to cry again. I was sick of crying. When I left the surgery, the woman and her kids were gone, but when I reached my Focus in the car park, there was a scratch running all along the length of the car. Chapter 22. I held off from driving like a maniac on the way to the pharmacy, even though the adrenaline running through my veins begged for speed. I'd never been a careless driver, but when my stress levels were high, I wanted nothing more than to put my foot down on the accelerator and drive as far and as fast as I could. But I wouldn't do that with Aiden in the car. As I made my way down the steepest hill in Bishoptown, I glanced in the rearview mirror and noticed a black transit van behind me. After turning right to drive over the bridge, I checked again, and there it was. The same black transit van. Even when I turned left onto the main shopping street in the village, the van was still there. I frowned and wondered whether it was a reporter, but Bishoptown was a small place, so it was just as reasonable that it could be someone following the same route through the village. When I parked up outside the pharmacy, the black van slowed down for a heartbeat before continuing on down the street. My suspicions were raised, but I told myself that the driver could simply have been looking for a parking space and hadn't found anything. "Wait for me to get out first," I said to Aiden as I checked for oncoming traffic. I was still spooked by the van, but also aware that Aiden's confinement had resulted in him missing out on the kind of street smarts that most 16-year-old boys would possess. I didn't feel comfortable even allowing him to get out of the car onto the pavement without me there. Not yet. Aiden was silent as I exited the car and hurried around to his side. He opened the door himself, and I took his hand to lead him down the street. With my free hand, I clutched my cardigan more tightly around me. It was a cool day, but the heavy knitwear and the anger coursing through my body made me feel sweaty and unkempt. My heart was still pounding from the unfortunate incident with the woman at the doctor's office and from the strange van following me along the street. I almost walked past the pharmacy. I was so distracted. I couldn't stop my eyes from roaming the faces of those walking around the village. No doubt they were tourists, but I couldn't stop thinking about who had taken Aiden. What if Aiden had already been face to face with his attacker, but he hadn't been able to tell me? What if the kidnapper came back and took him again? The pharmacy was like every other shop in Bishoptown, in a small, limestone terraced building that looked more like a house than a business. Most of the shops had quaint hanging baskets of busy lizzies and marigolds. The pharmacy had only one window and a wooden door with a bell. As I was paying for the prescription, the bell on the door jingled, indicating someone else had walked in. Eager to leave, I hurried to put the change from my purchase into my wallet so I could get out of the small shop.
Emma?
High on adrenaline, I spun around too fast, almost knocking into Aiden.
Oh, hi, Amy. I didn't expect to see you here.
It was a Tuesday. Teachers never had time off in the week.
How are...
I trailed off. Amy wasn't listening to me at all. She was staring, transfixed, at my son.
It's break time, she mumbled. I came to pick up my prescription.
She didn't even look at me once. She was staring at my son in such an intense manner that I almost pulled him back towards me and away from her.
Aiden, oh my God, it's really you.
She took a step forward, with her hand outstretched, but he ducked away from her, moving behind me. Amy's eyes raised to meet mine as she blinked away a few tears before composing herself.
I didn't mean, I heard what happened on the news and I wanted to call you, but...
My spine straightened. This was the woman whose negligence had led to my child being stolen from me. No wonder Aiden was cowering behind me. It wouldn't have been appropriate, Amy. My fingers tingled. After all these years, I thought I'd forgiven her. But I was wrong. I'd only managed to push those feelings aside in favor of getting on with my life. Now that Aiden had come back, those old feelings had resurfaced. Perhaps it was the unfortunate incident with the woman in the surgery, or perhaps it was the strange black van following me around the village, but I was in no mood to coddle the woman who had turned her back and allowed my son to disappear from school. Her face fell.
You're right, sorry, I'm so stupid, I'm just so... I'm so glad Aiden is alive. I mean, I know he's been through hell.
I finished for her.
He's been through hell.
As I stood there on the street looking at Amy, our years of working together melted away, leaving only my bitterness for the woman. I forgot all about the doll she'd bought me for my unborn child and the friendship we'd tentatively garnered over the last few years. I'd been desperate for someone to blame, and suddenly, here she was.
I'm so sorry, Emma,
she said. From the red flush working up her neck and the way her bottom lip trembled, I could tell she was about to cry. I turned away.
I should go. Wait,
she said.
I don't want... Emma, we've been friends for a long time now. I thought we've got past what happened.
I shook my head.
Everything is different now. I grieved for him. And I let him go. That was the only way I could get past what you did. But now he's here, and he's in pain, and I can't help but...
I paused. For the first time, I really looked at her. Why was she so emotional? Why was there a single tear running down her cheek? It all seemed contrived.
How could I trust anything she said?
I pulled Aiden away, hurrying to my car. Thinking back to the reporters and eyewitnesses on the day of Aiden's disappearance, I wondered if there was anything inconsistent about Amy. I remembered that after she'd noticed Aiden was missing, she had asked another teacher to take care of the class while she'd gone looking for Aiden herself. She was on her own for a number of minutes. What if... I opened the car door and let Aiden inside. DCI Stevenson had admitted that the kidnapper didn't have to be a man, though it was most likely that it was a man. I put the key into the ignition. Aiden would do something if he was face to face with his attacker, wouldn't he? He'd recognize them. So why was I suspecting everyone? Why was I suddenly believing that Amy, a petite and shy woman, could have stolen my son away and kept him locked up? Because... I was beginning to believe that people are capable of anything. People are multi-layered. Anyone can have a private side that verges on the dark and dangerous. Your doctor could be a sadist. Your primary school teacher could be a paedophile. Your beauty therapist could be a murderer. It could be anything. I watched Aidan put on his seatbelt and wondered if he remembered anything from his time as a captive. He was frightened of Rough Valley Forest, that much I knew. And I understood. But would he remember his kidnapper? And how would he act if he came face to face with them? As I pulled quickly out of the parking space, a black Renault Clio had to brake suddenly to avoid my car. I fumbled with a gear stick and waved sheepishly as the driver of the Clio honked his horn at me. My fingers trembled as I guided the car out of the space and onto the main street. "Shall we listen to the radio?" I said, too brightly. Aidan didn't respond. He gazed straight ahead in that same uninterested way. I clicked on the radio and tried to stop myself wondering what was in his mind. All the knowledge was there, but he refused to let it out. That was when I realized I was angry with him. I couldn't help it. I was angry with Aidan for not communicating with me. And I was suspicious. I was suspicious of everything. "Why don't you talk?" I said, banging the steering wheel. "Why won't you tell me?" I ran a red light. If Jake had been there, he would have forced me to pull over and driven the rest of the way home. He would have hated to see me in this state. But he wasn't there. It was only Aidan, who didn't seem perturbed by my unhinged state in the least. All he did was stare out through the windscreen, staring and thinking and not reacting to anything around him. Maybe Jake was right. Maybe he was a vegetable. No, I wouldn't believe it. A vegetable doesn't paint. A vegetable doesn't acknowledge my words. There was the time he nodded at me, and the time where I thought I heard him singing. Unless it had been a figment of my imagination. As the streets faded one into another, I took deep breaths and eased my foot off the accelerator. The paper bag from the pharmacy sat on Aidan's lap. My heart was pounding all the way home. When I checked the rearview mirror, the black transit van was back. I pulled into my drive and swore. Even more reporters were clustered all around the house. The transit van stopped a little way down the street. I was right. They'd been following me around as I went about my day-to-day chores, hanging around in a transit van like the mob following a target. The front door burst open and Denise stepped out. She rushed over to the door and opened Aidan's side as a swarm of people with cameras and microphones gathered around us. "What's going on?" I shouted. "How did you get in the house?" "Jake let me in earlier." "Where is he now?" I asked. "We need to get inside. There's been a development," she whispered. "It must be a big one." She nodded. "It is."
"Aidan, what's it like being in the real world? Aidan, do you still have an attachment to your kidnapper?"
yelled a reporter. I turned away from Denise and Aidan, stepped down the path towards the reporters at the end of the drive, and clenched both of my fists. I was hot all over despite the chill in the air.
"Fuck off and leave us alone! This is fucking private property and you're trespassing! I mean it! Leave us alone! Leave us alone!"
I was shaking as Denise wrapped an arm around my shoulder and guided me back up the path to the door. Chapter 23. "I'm putting the kettle on," said Denise. "Why don't you sit down for a minute and try to calm down?" I was pacing the length of the kitchen, rubbing my belly in circular motions. It was less than 2 weeks to my due date, and I was supposed to be nesting, not yelling at reporters. I was supposed to be making the house pretty, buying pink booties and hanging a mobile above the crib like a pregnancy montage in an 80s romantic comedy.
"What's happened? Why are the reporters like rabid dogs again?"
"Sit down for a moment, Emma." Denise flicked a switch to turn the kettle on. In the interest of getting the information faster, I sank my backside down onto a dining chair. Then I opened my hands and shrugged to prompt her to continue. "The police have asked Jake to go to the station for questioning."
"What?"
I could feel my blood pressure rising.
"Why?"
She spoke slowly in the same way I'd seen teachers talking to agitated students. I don't know all the details. I think they want to go over Jake's statement for the day Aiden went missing.
It can't be Jake. Aiden has lived here with him for days now. Don't you think Aiden would have reacted? It can't be. I know him. He's my husband. This is his baby. Anyway, how would Jake have had the time to keep a boy locked away for 10 years?
Now, I'm not saying that it is Jake. I'm not saying that at all. But wives have been lied to in the past, and husbands have found ways to conduct all kinds of heinous and time-consuming activities. He poured water into two mugs. But I'm not saying that Jake did it, okay? All I know is that he's been asked to answer a few questions to help the investigation. Could be nothing.
Fat lot of good you are!
My brain-to-mouth filter had stopped working due to the intense stress of the day.
If you can't even tell me why they're questioning Jake!
Denise was very quiet as she stirred the milk into the tea.
Or maybe you won't tell me. That's more likely.
My job is to aid you through this difficult process. Doing that is my priority, which is why my colleagues might feel it necessary to hold back information at times like this. I'm here to help, okay? I know this is hard. Now, have a cuppa and try to relax. You have the baby to think about.
Oh, yes, I forgot. I'm a walking incubator.
I snapped as I took the tea from her. Then I shrugged and sighed.
Sorry. Difficult day. I'm getting fed up with everyone expecting me to put the baby first. I am, of course, but I matter too, you know.
Of course you do. Sorry, I didn't mean to imply that you didn't. I smiled thinly.
You probably didn't, I'm just sensitive.
I'm not surprised. You're a strong woman to be getting through all this. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise.
I screamed at those reporters.
She sipped her tea and chuckled. They've heard worse.
Oh, God, poor Jake. Alone at the station. I should go, but I can't take Aiden there, not with all those reporters out there.
I chewed on my bottom lip and wondered whether I could send someone else to meet him. He had a solicitor, but maybe that would send the wrong signal. I could ask Sonia or Josie, but Jake had never been as close with Josie as I had, and Sonia was Rob's mother, so that could be uncomfortable. Jake didn't really have any male friends. He hadn't even bothered with a stag do before the wedding.
Can you call and ask how long he'll be there for? Can I talk to him over the phone?
Before Denise could answer, my mobile phone started to ring. I took it out of the bottom of my bag and frowned in disappointment. I had been hoping it would be Jake calling from the police station, but it was Rob.
Hi.
Emma, I heard they took Jake in for questioning. What's going on?
He asked.
They just want to ask him a few more questions about the day Aiden was taken. It's nothing, Rob. I mean, they've had you in for questioning, too. They've had half the town in.
No, this is different. I heard him moving around as he spoke. There was a breathlessness to his voice, as though he couldn't stand still. I imagined his energy seeping out in nervous tics. I could see him pacing in my mind's eye.
The press has caught onto this like it's a big deal. They've not done that before.
Oh, they'll latch onto anything, Rob,
I argued. There was a pause.
You don't really believe that Jake took Aiden, do you? And then fooled me for 10 years. How would he do that, Rob? How? How would he have my son locked away all these years while romancing me and marrying me and getting me pregnant? Don't you think I would know?
Em.
Don't you trust me to know?
Emma. His voice was calmer now. A deep tone caught my attention and my body reacted in a physical way. I shook my head, passing it off as leftover feelings from when we were teenagers. I'd always loved Rob's deep, velvety voice.
I do trust you. You're one of the few people in this world I'd trust with my life.
Why do I sense a butt coming on?
I don't think you see him the way others see him. Don't you remember how at school some of the girls called him perv because of the way he looked at them?
What? No! And how would that...
Emma, listen to me. This isn't coming from a place of jealousy. I swear it. God knows I hate him because you love him, but... This is me thinking rationally for a change. It's possible. I know you don't want to accept that, If he doesn't have a watertight alibi for the time Aiden disappeared, it's possible that he did this. Do you know where he is 24 hours a day?
No, but...
Then it's possible.
You're forgetting one thing, Rob.
What's that?
Aiden. He was afraid when we went to Rough, which means he's afraid of the place he was held captive, right?
I guess so.
With that logic, he must also be afraid of the person who kidnapped him.
Rob sighed.
Aiden and Jake have lived in the house for days now. He's never shown any fear towards Jake. The first night here, they set the table together. In fact, Aiden seems to really like Jake. He'll follow him around doing everything he says.
Emma, don't you see how that's strange? If Aiden has more of an attachment to Jake than anyone else, that's fucking weird on its own. Look, this is really hard to say, but I'm just gonna say it.
What?
Aiden was with this person for 10 years. We don't know what happened between the two of them. I've been reading up about Stockholm Syndrome and all that stuff. Abusers and victims have a complicated relationship.
No, this isn't like that, no.
I shook my head. I was on my feet now, clenching and unclenching one hand. Denise watched me carefully, so I turned my back on her. There's a chance that Aiden hasn't seen anyone apart from the person who took him. Like that girl in Germany or whatever. There's a chance that the only person Aiden remembers from his childhood is the monster who took him. And there's a chance that Aiden has developed a fondness for his attacker.
Fuck off, Rob, I can't.
I think you should come and stay with me.
No, it's not him!
I was crying now. Fat tears rolled down my cheeks. I don't think the two of you are safe there. Stay with me, please, Emma.
It's not him!
You don't know that. What if it is?
Rob, he's my husband. I know him.
Those are the famous last words, aren't they? I know him. I love him. Don't be that woman. I took in a deep, shaky breath.
And who's to say you're any better than him? You could be a monster too, for all I know. Everyone could be.
I hung up. Are you okay, Emma? Denise asked. I wiped my eyes and nodded. Then I walked over to the window and opened the curtains an inch. The reporters were still there, waiting on the pavement outside the house. I hated them. They made me feel trapped inside my own home. With a flick of my wrist, the curtain was closed and I backed away. What was I going to do? Aiden sat on the sofa in our living room with his hands on his lap watching the television. It was only when I turned around that I noticed the television was off. He'd been sitting in silence, watching nothing. Though the heating was controlled by a thermostat, I still felt a chill creep up my spine and I shivered. Thought of Rob's words, not only about Jake, but also about Aiden and what he'd said about the kidnapper. Up until that moment, I had been so sure Aiden would be terrified of the person who had stolen him from me. We knew Aiden had been chained, we knew he had been abused. But what we didn't know was what the abuser had said to him. Had he played mind games with my son? Had he spent the last 10 years convincing Aiden that he was the only person who loved him? What had they done to my little boy? I couldn't stand to be in the same room as my son. Not at that moment. I rushed out of the living room and hurried upstairs to lie down. But as I went into my bedroom and looked at the bed I shared with my husband, I couldn't stop thinking about what Rob had said. I'd let him into my head, and a seed of doubt had been planted. Of course I'd seen wives in the press talking about how they'd had no idea their husband was a serial rapist or a child molester, and yes, there had been occasions when men had locked young girls or women up in a basement and soundproofed it, living one life upstairs and another downstairs. But this was different. 10 years. How would that be possible? And wherever Aiden had been kept, it was nowhere near Jake's house. Jake would need to go to this hypothetical place every day, or at least every couple of days. But the only time Jake and I were apart was the adult learning art class he ran in York twice a week. He'd have no time. The baby kicked me again. I rubbed my belly as I sank down onto the bed. My head was spinning with desperate thoughts. My ankles ached. My legs were tired.
I knew that if I leaned back, I would fall straight to sleep despite the stress of the day so far. But I didn't do any of that. I picked up my phone and called the Adult Learning Center in York. I asked to book onto the Introduction to Art History course on Tuesdays and Thursdays.
Absolutely. What name is it, please?
Amy Perry, I lied.
I should let you know that the usual tutor has taken some time off, so we have a support tutor in place at the moment.
That's okay.
Who is the usual tutor?
I asked.
Oh, sorry, dear, I'm new, and I don't have that information to hand at the moment. We're in the middle of changing our computer system. It's all a little hectic here. But if you like, I can arrange for a prospectus to be sent to you. It has the course information and contact details for your tutor.
I agreed to have the prospectus sent straight away. Chapter 24. Jake tumbled into the house after hurrying away from the reporters. I watched him pull into the drive through a crack in the curtains, and he slammed the door so hard that I thought the glass panel might shatter. Aidan barely processed the loud noise, but Denise came hurrying through from the kitchen. I noticed she'd stayed later than usual. It was dark out, and I had expected her to be on her way home by now.
"Fucking assholes!" Jake exclaimed.
"It's bad enough I'm hounded by the police, but now I have to be hounded by them too!"
I bit my thumbnail as he came striding into the living room. His hair was disheveled and his shirt was unbuttoned at the collar. His skin was flushed and his eyes were wide.
"Jake," I said, "not in front of Aidan."
His eyes narrowed, but he glanced at Aidan before nodding.
"Are you all right?"
I asked, aware of how stiff my voice sounded.
"Did you say anything to the reporters?" Denise asked.
Jake shook his head.
"The fuckers wanted me to, but I didn't give them the satisfaction. And yes, I am all right. Thanks for asking."
I found myself rubbing my hands again. Then I started scratching at the sore skin on the fold next to my thumb. I shoved my hands deep into my jeans.
"I couldn't come with them all out there. A black transit van kept following me around all day today."
"It's all right," Jake said. "I know you couldn't come." He pulled me into a tight embrace and whispered into my hair.
"I'm so glad you're here. I've needed you all day."
Then he took my hand and led me over to the sofa and sat me down next to him.
"Emma, it was awful. They kept going over my statement, picking it apart. It was 10 years ago. How am I supposed to remember? Everything was so blurry with the flood happening. I just don't understand why they keep asking me these things."
"It's okay," I said. I pulled him closer to me, but some of the adrenaline from earlier was still rushing through me. There was a part of me that wanted to push him away, not bring him closer. My skin prickled where he touched me.
"It's over now. They didn't charge you with anything, so you must have cleared up whatever issue they had."
"They have nothing because I've done nothing."
Jake glared at Denise.
"Maybe you can tell your mate down the station."
Denise shuffled awkwardly from one foot to the other.
"I think it's probably time I headed home. I'm glad that everything has been sorted out, Mr. Hewitt."
I noticed that Denise never called him Jake. Perhaps it was because Jake still carried the air of a teacher even when he was outside the classroom. Or perhaps it was because Denise didn't feel completely comfortable around him. Or maybe it was more indicative of the patronizing way she tried to pal up to me, always calling me Emma and popping the kettle on. On the other hand, Marcus struck up the occasional conversation about cars or football, probably in the hope that it would ignite Jake's attention and get him on side. It could be sickening at times. The door closed behind her, and I heard a few reporters speak to her as she made her way to her car down the street.
"They'll get bored soon," I said. "They'll stop hanging around after dark soon, anyway."
Jake pulled me closer.
"I'm so glad you're here."
I tried not to allow my body to stiffen, but all I could think about was Aidan sitting across the room from us. I tried to disentangle myself from Jake's arms.
"Hey, Aidan's here, you know."
Jake gave him the barest of glances.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe we could stick the telly on for a while.
What? And watch more Disney?
What is it this time? Aladdin? Sleeping Beauty?
The boy's 16. He doesn't need to be subjected to any more of that claptrap.
What happened at the police station?
I asked.
You're far more agitated than I would be after being asked to clarify something simple.
Spittle flew from his mouth when he answered.
How do you think it went? I knew what they were meaning when they asked me those questions. They were insinuating I did it. They think I could take a 6-year-old boy. It's disgusting.
What questions did they ask you?
What didn't they ask me?
He sighed.
It was a breakdown, basically. They wanted to know every second of my whereabouts for the entire day. Of course, it was impossible to answer. It was 10 years ago, and everyone was rushing around like a blue-arsed fly trying to find a dry classroom in that leaking cesspool of a school. I thought I'd been with Simon from IT for most of the day, but apparently he says I wasn't. I distinctly remember us going to E6 to check on the roof there. It's all ridiculous. As if I would have even had time to do such a thing. 10 years!
That's what I said. He pulled me closer and kissed me on the mouth. My Emma. My beautiful wife. To think our little daughter will be here to meet us soon. I pushed him back. Jake, Aiden's here.
Aiden, dear boy, he said, imitating a stereotypical public school teacher. Perhaps it's time for you to go to bed now. I have some things to discuss with your mum.
Actually, it is getting a bit late, I said.
Maybe we should all go to bed.
Has he eaten? Denise made him a sandwich. Aiden made his way out of the room, closing the door behind him. My heart sank to see the way he plodded along the floor with his stiff, cumbersome gait. It was getting a little better each day, but I wondered whether he would ever stride or run in the same way as the other young men and women.
Where were we, Mrs. Price Hewitt?
Maybe one day we can ditch the price. He landed a few small kisses down my neck.
Jake, come on. It's been a horrible day. Can we just sit and chill for a bit?
He pulled away and crossed one leg over the other in a fluid motion. From the way he held his body, I could tell he was annoyed.
It's just, I'm so stressed out, and... Look, we'll have some sandwiches and watch an hour of TV and then see how we're feeling, okay? I just need to decompress.
I started rubbing my hands again.
Someone keyed my car. I was at the doctor's and this woman was talking to me.
Who keyed your car? Why were you at the doctor's?
When I took Aiden to his therapy session yesterday, Dr. Foster suggested I might need a checkup. When I was in the surgery, this woman started talking to me about Aiden and... I don't know, I think I snapped at her. She must have keyed the car on the way out, and then there was this transit van following me. I guess it was reporters. I lost my temper with them coming into the house.
By this point, I was scratching the skin on my hands. Jake leaned forward and tucked them in his own.
What about the doctor? What did she say? Are you all right? The baby?
I'm fine, just a little bit of high blood pressure, so I have some tablets to take. He kissed both my hands and then let them go.
You need to rest.
Why don't you ask Rob to take Aiden for a few days? He can take on some of the responsibilities for a change.
Mentioning Rob only made me think about the things he'd said over the phone. I couldn't stand to think about Aiden somehow still being connected to his kidnapper. What if it was true? What if Aiden was even in touch with his kidnapper? Did Aiden know how to use a phone? Could he speak when I wasn't around? I rubbed my eyes before letting my fingers run through my hair. Jake reached forward and took my arms, pulling me towards him. When he kissed me, I kissed him back. But my body reacted on its own. My mind was elsewhere. I was considering everything I knew so far. I knew that Jake had been called in for questioning. I knew that the Adult Learning Center could not confirm that he worked there, but they did offer up a story in line with Jake's personal life. He hadn't been working at the center since Aiden was found. He had been going to work at the school part-time, but that was all. And I couldn't stop thinking about how things had been with Jake before all this started. In fact, before I found out I was pregnant. We'd been married for a year. Though we'd discussed the idea of a child, Jake had always said that there was no rush. He wanted to make sure I was ready after everything that had happened with Aiden. I thought it was sweet, and I'd agreed. I wasn't even sure I wanted another child. It felt too much like replacing Aiden. But after the honeymoon period, a lot of things changed. After we'd filed the wedding pictures in an album and found ourselves lost in the routine of day-to-day living, something changed between us. Jake was very particular about how the house should look, and whenever I tried to buy a new ornament or rearrange the furniture to accommodate my own belongings, Jake didn't like it. For a time, I could see that he was trying to put up with these changes, but I saw the long, hard look he gave the old pine desk I'd brought from my parents' house. He made plenty of offhand comments about the paint marks and the coffee rings on the lid, and more than once jokingly suggested we put it in the garage. Then one day I came home, and in the place of my beloved childhood desk stood a brand new glass-topped monstrosity. Ta-da! He had announced, standing next to the desk with his arms out wide. I remember that it was a Saturday and I'd spent the morning with Josie in York. In fact, it had been Jake's idea for me to go. Clearly, he'd wanted me out of the way so he could replace the desk. I had stood there, thin-lipped and tense, digging my thumbnail into the palm of my hand. "Where's my desk?" I asked. "I bought you a new one. It has..." "Where's my desk?" It was probably the worst fight we've ever had. Jake had not thrown the desk out, as I had first feared. Instead, he'd created an art studio in the garage, with the desk, my paints, my easel, and a bunch of my paintings. Once I had cooled down, I decided that it was nice to have my own space, even if it was relegated to the garage. In summer, the garage is a perfect place to paint. The sun streams in through the open shutter door. But after the desk incident, it was plain to see that the honeymoon period was over. Though Jake always had a voracious appetite when it came to the bedroom, our nighttime activities became a desperate way to convince ourselves that despite the constant bickering about who should do the washing up or whose turn it was to take the bin out, there was love at the core of our relationship. I fell pregnant with Bump a few months after that, despite taking my birth control pills daily. And after I fell pregnant, which we called Kismet because it was a happy accident, Jake rarely touched me. There was something about me being pregnant that turned him off. Even when the pregnancy hormones made me rage with sexual frustration, he completely ignored me. He even slept in the spare bedroom half a dozen times, saying that I clearly needed some space. Which I decided was code for, "Satisfy yourself tonight, honey. I'm not in the mood." Jake did not like the way I looked as a pregnant woman. He was supportive. He rubbed my feet and made me cups of tea. He asked after the baby and checked that I was feeling okay. But he never touched my bump. Not ever. He never felt the baby kick. He was delighted to know that she was kicking, but he could not touch my bump. He said it made him feel nauseous, but wouldn't go into any further detail when I pressed the matter. Of course, I found it a bit weird, but I had been creeped out about pregnancy at one point, and he was so supportive about everything else. He came to all the scans, he held my hand, he listened to the birth plan and took an interest in how to make it as safe and comfortable as we could. He could be quite protective about what I carried and how much I moved around. I used to jog 3 times a week, but once my belly began to get bigger, he found the thought of me tripping and landing on my stomach too much to bear. In the end, I gave up the running in favour of yoga. Jake was, is, and always has been a complicated man. That evening, when he came home from the police station and wanted me more than ever, well, it made me realise that I was also a complicated woman. Because I wanted him to. Chapter 25. The next day, Wednesday, I learned that women have to pay a price if they allow themselves to be shrill. I was a YouTube phenomenon. The clip of me screaming at the reporters went viral, and the comments were toxic. Women can never be shrill.
It does something to a man. It hits them square in the testicles and shrivels them right up. I've seen Jake physically wince if my